Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So right this second, as the Mars-Saturn conjunction for the first time in 28 years, and also Mercury just entered Cancer 45 minutes ago, it says there's time to take down an old sail and put up the new sail to catch this wind. It says new beginnings, deeper dedication to old work, time for all allies to connect in a manner of reciprocal blessing and pragmatic mysticism. So, as we know, there's a KPFA summer fun drive coming up, and on the 24th, we'll be doing a two-hour special, Knock on Wood, and one of the guests will be John Burdett, author of Bangkok Haunts, which is such a fabulous novel, but it's pertinent to us right now. In this novel, he has a hero who is really a Buddhist noir detective who can see everything. They're riding in a taxi, and he says all Bangkok taxi drivers practice witchcraft, but this one is a postgraduate level. Garlands in honor of the journey goddess Mai Yanang hang from the rearview mirror with a bunch of amulets obscuring the middle slice of external reality. I should mention that there are two ways of avoiding death on our roads, Pop Pong and Pop Gun. Pop Gun signifies the usual dreary, ineffective stuff like wearing a seatbelt and not driving too fast. We generally prefer Pop Pong with its inviolable spiritual protection. Done properly, Pop Pong not only protects your life, but it also deals out severe punishments to those who threaten it. And so the cab driver is saying, oh, better to get the right amulet. How can you walk around without protection? And his ally says, Lek, the transsexual hero, gives me a told-you-so nod. He never removes his shamanic plant roots wrapped in yellow yantra cloth, which hang in a small bunch from a cord around his neck. He often chides me for trying to take reality naked, like a dumb farang. Farang, of course, is the term for honkies or white people. That would be some of us attempting to transcend that. So we say we're going to do, on the 24th and starting really today, politics. We go, well, politics, there's the seatbelt kind of politics, our necessary traditional reporting, and then there's the Pop Gung politics, the magic team, and that would be us. We're both of that. So on the 24th, we'll be doing Buddhist, Noir, Voodoo, New Orleans, Thailand campaign coverage, including the ancestors. And so we begin today also with quoting a wonderful late great ally and really great friend, Vine Deloria Jr., a Lakota scholar and really great human, who said, every society needs its sacred places. A society that cannot remember its past and honor it is in peril of losing its soul. Thank you, Vine, and Vine, come on in. So today, with this powerful time of dedication, it says whatever we dedicate to, we can really connect and really make things happen. You know, it's our dedication to our medicine to preserve and protect life. So, more than perfectly, we are welcoming revered, very fierce and strong Gwich'in elder Sarah James, live from her home in the Arctic village of Alaska. It is 68 degrees north, way up there. Sarah embodies dynamic dedication to her people and their kinship to the land, which is the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It is pitched to Americans as Anwar, but the last time I had Sarah on the radio in 2005, she chided us and says, do not call it Anwar. You know, that's a term that makes it less alive, you know, and reduces it, because the Gwich'in know it as the sacred place where life begins. So for over 20 years, Sarah has been speaking with fierce lucidity about global warming and the sociopathic folly of drilling. She's been honored for her work, including being awarded the Goldman Environmental Prize. Welcome, Sarah.
Hello. Thank you. Masito.
And our great cohort, Carol Hoover, joining us from Cordova, Alaska. Alaska environmental cultural preservation activist who co-founded with Alaska IAAC native Dune Lankard the IAAC Preservation Council in Cordova. Their work tells the story of the devastating effect of oil exploitation on habitat and indigenous people from both ends of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Prince William Sound, and guides us to participate in protecting all life. So welcome, Carol.
Hey, greetings from Cordova, Alaska.
That's wonderful. So as you've put on our work table, it's good. We're going to address the current Supreme Court Exxon misjudgment and how it affects all of us, the current multiple bill congressional assault on the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. It is a refuge, and the days of cheap oil are over. All of that is on our work table. But, Sarah, when I met you in person and you were here in D.C. at the studio, I guess that was 2005, you were doing your vigil in D.C. for, was it 4 months?
Yeah, about 4 or 5 months, doing vigil in, out in a mall of Washington, D.C., and talking to different people, and I receive a lot of good support, and I got compliment for doing so at that time, even though then it was a hard time, too.
Yes, absolutely. But I think that we want to draw on that because that was like your pope pong, you know, your put your dedicated energy into it, which we want to draw forth now. That idea of, you know, gathering. There's the practical level that we're about to do of informing people, going, oh, so much is at stake, and then we add into it the brew of your powerful dedication. And here you were in this hot, steamy place, you know, bless your heart. So I know that, Carol, you wanted to bring up the current Supreme Court Exxon misjudgment and how it affects all of us. Do you want to guide us into that?
Well, the Exxon debacle has so many mistruths around it, and the Supreme Court, unfortunately, underscored this huge misjudgment, not only to the people of Cordova and the families of Prince William Sound that lost their livelihoods, and to an entire ecosystem that has never recovered, but it actually threatens all of our human rights, because what this judgment means is that multinational corporations have the right to destroy a way of life and an ecosystem and pay next to nothing for it. One thing that people may not realize is that because they have the ability to appeal and appeal and appeal, because they are the richest corporation on the planet, that 20% of the plaintiffs in this case have passed away in the last 18 years. Another thing that's not understood about this is that this grievous, horrible disaster created traumatic shock syndrome, nervous breakdowns, divorces, suicides, lots of effects of this horribly toxic oil spill have come to bear upon the people of this region. And now basically corporations have been given the right to do this kind of thing, even when they were criminally charged against it as at fault.
So we are certainly dedicated to accountability increasingly, and it's very powerful then. So in a sense, well, so Pope Gun, the legal system didn't work in this case, so now in a sense we want Pope Pong. How might you, how do you, I don't know, what is your counsel, Sarah, about how we deal with the Exxon winning this misjudgment?
Yes, what happened to that justice for all? Because this is not justice that's been done. It's injustice to environment and to the human rights, because the oil spill is still there 1 or 2 foot below the sandbar, and they call it it's a cleanup. And just because American corporation, which is oil that rules the world, saying that they spent enough on that oil spill, and they had to go that route. What happened to that justice for all, for people and the environment? I just don't see the connection that for the rights to the human rights.
Now, will this Sorry, but I know that you're about to gather the Gwich'in July 14th through the 18th in, you said, in the Old Crow Village in Canada, Yukon Village. And it, will that be that will be a subject of conversation, yes, and council?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's, we have this Gwich'in gather every 2 years since 1988 when we took the position against that oil development of the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, the birthplace of the porcupine caribou, and the Gwich'in way of life protected. And this is our 20th year anniversary standing against a multi-million corporation, and we did good. We did good because we make friends. It's up to the Congress to make this decision to open up the Arctic coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife to open up to the oil development. But we went and educate to all the grassroots organization, to the Congress, to the voters, to the constituent, and so far, since 1988, repeatedly, we challenged at battles after battles, and American half spoke loud and clear that they don't want no gas and oil development in the birthplace of the porcupine caribou, where the sacred place where the life begin is a name for the Gwich'in people. We say Ishikotan Gwantaiko Tlet, that means sacred place where the life begin. And they stood up loud and clear, and they spoke very loud already, Americans, and which they did good. And they're not wrong. Don't feel like you're wrong by stopping the oil company, because right now we got 11 bills in the Congress. We got people are panicking over the high gas price, which is not going to come down soon. Oil belongs to the global corporation. The decision is made at global corporation, and the United States don't have oil to provide for themselves. So it has to be at the global corporation. So it really belongs to global corporation. And if they develop the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, once they develop, it's gone forever. It's not going to come back. So the right thing to do, like I said, for justice for all, is to say no to gas and oil development of Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And thank you to all the Americans that stood loud and clear for last 20 years. Thank you again, Masih Shalaknai. Thank you, all my relations.
Yes, that is so beautiful and strong, Shalaknai, for all our relations and justice for all. Because Carol, I'd forward you an email from a ally who was distressed at getting email going, well, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, look at it, it's no big deal, and whatever, you know, and a lot of things. And you'd sent me back this really great piece from the Gwich'in Steering Committee. Do you want to animate that for us? I mean, it begins by saying, first of all, let's compare the size of our hearts to the rest of our bodies, small in comparison yet integral to life. Do you want to guide us into the beauty and necessity of the Arctic coastal plain?
Well, it's a very unique ecosystem, and it's very special. It's defined by the Brooks Range, and it's a coastal plain. And it is obviously very, very special by all the birds that visit it, too. Birds from every single continent on the planet come to the coastal plain to feed. And the porcupine caribou herd, and Sarah, do correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I believe and what I've heard is that it is actually the largest land mammal natural movement left on the planet. In other words, they are able to use their old, ancient way of life that has always been, and they have always supported the Gwich'in. The connection between the human rights issue here is something that I think we all forget. We all feel for the Native Americans and the indigenous peoples, And right now we have a chance to say we really do care and do the right thing. That's why when Sarah says thank you to all the people in the United States and the world that want to preserve this ecosystem, to ruin it at this point, a time in the planet, it would be criminal in so many ways that it's almost impossible to describe. So I say that we have to actually stand up and make those phone calls. I do want to report that Sarah and I both know that the American people are in a terrible position right now because of the price of oil, but I really hope that Congress will turn around and tell the people of the United States and actually the planet the truth. The price of oil is never going to go down. And selling our refuge to the multinational corporations is not going to lower the price of oil for us in the United States at all. It is a debased lie that drilling in the refuge is going to lower the price of oil. We have reached peak oil. I have confidence in the United States that we will convince our brothers and sisters and congresspeople that we have to go for alternative energy. And the symbol of the refuge preserved with the oil in the ground, which is not enough to take care of our energy needs or the world's, would be a true showing of how the United States is actually moving in the right direction.
And
so I encourage everyone to call their senators and congressmen and say no. No drilling in the refuge.
So what are the 11 bills coming down in Congress about the assault on the Arctic Wildlife Refuge?
Well, I would say that we could send you all the numbers. They're doing it all different kinds of way. Actually, just recently there was a small victory because the GOP admitted the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from the energy bill that just passed. But the spin now in coming from Stephen's office is they are saying that every Democrat that votes against drilling in ANWR is anti-American. So we all have to look at that one. In other words, they're trying to say that in order to drill, if you're going to be a patriotic, we've got to drill in the refuge. It's a bunch of baloney. So I would say that the Alaska Wilderness League actually has the list of bills on their website. All you have to do is look up Alaska Wilderness League, and they are daily giving us direction and information about who in Congress is for drilling and who in Congress is against. But the American people, your phone calls, your faxes to your congresspeople do make a difference. They do listen to you on this issue. Sarah knows that they hear us when we call on this issue. And they're reporting to us that Americans are saying, drill, drill, drill. You know, that would mean off the coast of California, off Florida, more in the Gulf, regardless of the global warming. And Sarah has been talking about global warming now for 20 years. And I think, Sarah, you might want to talk to that about how evident it is up in your homeland.
Yes, global warming is real in the Arctic. Burning oil is the cause of the global warming, and we can't say it's not. Everybody knows it's real, and the hard time is here, and it's going to be here. And the only way we can help each other is change our way of thinking and do the right thing. And the right thing to do is keep the oil. Keep the oil in the refuge and no gas and oil development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, because you're putting yourself out on more global warming, climate change. And we have to think about our future generation. What are we leaving them behind? What are we going to do? I mean, what are they going to do? And I might not see it. But then my son's children will see it. So we got to think that way. And light. Global warming is real in the Arctic. In Arctic village this past winter, there was wolf around the village because they can't find something to eat outside the village. They had to come and look for food to eat because there was at that time there was no snow for a long time, and they had a hard time getting their food, so they had to come to the village. The climate is extreme change. It's neither a heat wave or it's neither a cold spill. And we're in between that all the time. And that's how it is right now. It's hot one day and cold the next day. It used to be never like that.
And just so we can see it, Sarah, so what is the connection when there's no snow that the wolves can't find food? What is the connection there?
Well, anyway, when there's no snow, when wolf trying to get their food, they outrun them because wolves can't run too hard on frozen ground and taste up their food. And so they can't get to their preps, and then they come to the village
right.
to look for food.
Right. No, that's well spoken. We can see it now in hot and cold. I think everywhere in the world now people go, oh, we're really in it. It's rocking and rolling back and forth, all the weathers. You know, again, you know, the myths speak to us. Yeah, ancient myth, 2,500 years ago, you know, Artemis says to King Pentheus, don't cut down the trees, don't develop the land, or I will send floods and droughts, you know, and it's like, oh, let's go, yeah. So, yes, what you're saying is really crucial, change our way of thinking, and as you mentioned, yeah. Carol, the theme is, you know, how to not appeal to fear, but to ingenuity. Yes, were you about to say something?
Well, I just want to say back in 1994-95, you know, Cordova is down by Prince William Sound. I mean, it is on the other side of the pipeline from Prudhoe Bay, and which is on the north shore where most of the oil development is going on. And the refuge is actually the only part of northern Alaska that is not developed. It is still a pristine ecosystem, and it actually operates as an ecosystem. It is one of the places where the polar bears and the seals and everything can splash there, you know, off the coastal plain. And it just, I can't underscore the tragedy that it would be to turn it into an oil field. There is no safe way to drill for oil, no matter what anyone tells you. Ask them to ask you for examples of safe oil drilling. It just does not exist. There are oil spills every year on Prudhoe Bay, and we do not know how to clean oil off of ice. But back to 1994, that was the first year that we in Cordova heard from the Gwich'in of the North that the elders were telling us that they could not see ice as far as the eye could see. So the first time we heard about the massive retreat of the Arctic ice was from the Gwich'in. And this year, I unfortunately am going to report that there is a chance, maybe over 50% chance, that there will be no Arctic ice this summer. None. And so we have to realize that we have to change our outlook on how all of us react to our actions. And we have to realize we have to be leaders of changing the way we look at oil and its consumption. And we can start with the refuge. We can start there, and it will mean something for human rights, for the Gwich'in, and for all of us to keep our oil in the ground at the refuge.
It is so poignant. I mean, everything real, everything symbolic. So we've bombed in Iraq the Garden of Eden. That apparently is where it was. And as Sarah reminds us, the Arctic Refuge is the place where all life begins. And this calling forth, you know, away from fear, but to ingenuity and spunkiness and autonomy and true democracy. There's an interesting thing happening at quite a rapid pace in Texas, which is a lot of the great oil ranches are converting to wind power, massive wind power. I got off the phone yesterday with there's some really kick-butt positive women in Texas who are, you know, stewards of 17, 18, 15,000 acres, and they're converting from, you know, cattle, which doesn't make any money, and oil, which is almost all gone, to wind, and supplying huge amounts to San Antonio and Austin from wind power. And we go, all right, ingenuity, there we go. And, you know, in the heart of darkness, Texas, it's turning around. And so I think that's also part of what we want to go, like, no, you can't have life and feel the connection. I know, Carol, that you've been, you know, ardent and in a positive, high dudgeon way that, you know, environmental groups have decided to kind of edit out the human rights aspect of the Arctic Refuge, and you're ardent about bringing that back in. Do you want to address that issue, going, oh, environmental community, no, humans are part of it?
I have to say, then Sarah, then you, I want you to talk more about this, because I don't want to blame the environmental community. I think they did some focus groups, and they listened to people. And the thing that people are talking about the most now is the hit on their pocketbooks with gasoline prices. And the environmental community is fighting harder than any group that I know of to save the Arctic Refuge, so I don't want to put any, you know, bad anything on the environmental group, so to speak, collectively, because they are trying and working their best. If it weren't for them, we would have drilled there already. But I would say collectively to the American people, I don't think the connection is being made between our human rights and oil consumption. We know, and Sarah and I both know greatly, what the drilling for oil has done to the people of Nigeria and so many places in South America and Colombia. And what it does, it displaces indigenous people. I mean, a lot of places in Ecuador, they just get moved off their land, or their water and way of life is completely destroyed. And we just keep driving around like it's not happening. And so I want us to realize it is going to happen to us. All of our sacred places left in the United States are going to be drilled and plundered beyond repair. I mean, look what's happened in Prince William Sound. Look what Exxon has done, and our Supreme Court, to the people of Cordova and Prince William Sound. We have to realize that Alaska is the only place in North America that has a marketable wild seafood base. Every place else is hatcheries and farmed. Alaska is the only place left in North America that has enough wild seafood that they can market it. And that's horrifying. I mean, fisheries all over the planet are plummeting. And we can just keep going around and buying our, you know, wild, you know, our hatchery and our farmed fish and think everything is fine. Well, everything's not going to be fine pretty soon. Yet, Caroline, I know you always stress the positive, and we all love you for that, because you believe in the ingenuity and the creativity of the human spirit. And I'm speaking to that right now, because we need it more than ever, and we have to acknowledge what's happened and what we need to do in order to really be leaders on this planet.
Well, and absolutely. And Sarah, when you say Shalak Nai, you know, for all our relations, I think it is whatever we do to animals, whatever we do to any group of people, we will, of course, do to ourselves. I mean, that sense of it is all interrelated, and as you've been so dedicated, well, it's really more than 20 years. It's your whole life, isn't it, really, Sarah, that, you know, for protecting land, people, being a strong voice.
Yes, it's our way of life, and I'm 64 years old, so this is my responsibility for the area I'm coming from, and where I'm from, and where my people are from. And we're united on this issue. The 15 villages on both sides, Canada and U.S. Kuchin villages, are united on this issue, and still is, and on human rights. And we're going to have a Kuchin gather in Old Crow, Yukon Territory, Canada, 14 to 18. And again, back in 1988, when you took that position, we were talking about global warming, climate change then too. And that's one of the reasons we made that decision. And it wasn't a really easy decision to make. And we know that it's going to attract people from all over the world to come into our country, too, to see the last part of the ecosystem that still works, where many, many 150 different species of birds and ducks come into from all over the world to nest here every year. There's fish. Right now, maybe one-tenth of the coastline we're talking about. The rest is into development or will be along the Arctic Ocean coast. So we're talking about very small portion of coastline that we're protecting, where polar bear might be safe, because polar bear is endangered now. The world knows about that, but it also endangered the people that live and depend on that Porcupine River caribou. And that's us, Kuchen people. There's we used to be 100,000 people. Now there's only maybe 8,000-9,000. So that's how much we got affected by the changes.
Wow.
But we are standing strong, and we're going to remain standing strong, because we know this is the right thing to do for the planet.
That's, you're absolutely right. That's very strong. Our guests today are Sarah Jane and Carol Hoover, and we're going to take a very short break with some Iraqi music to remind us of the kinship of all of us. And you can join us after break by calling 510-848-4425, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our guests today are Gwich'in Elder Sarah James, joining us from Arctic Village, which is way north. It is the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It is the sacred place where life begins, and we're also joined by our longtime ally, Carol Hoover, Alaska Environmental Cultural Preservation Activist, who co-founded with Iak Native Dune Lankard the Iak Preservation Council in Cordova, Alaska, and also lives in the Bay Area. Yes, very strong. And also you can join us by calling 510-848-4425. We are gathering our medicine. The reason I wanted to play that just little snippet from the Hookah Cafe of, you know, Middle Eastern music, saying we are kinned, and I think of, you know, music where we are gathering our medicine, our dedication now, and Carol and Sarah James are guiding us to go, ooh, you know, everything is connected to everything. We cannot let this be drilled. We cannot let this go. And animating it, you know, we've done over the years many shows on the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, and people who did documentaries following reverently the porcupine caribou herd, the longest migration of any terrestrial mammal in the world. And the herd gives birth to 40 to 50,000 calves. And the Arctic National Refuge is its nursery grounds in the coastal plains, where the highly nutritious sedge grass grows when the herd arrives. They are safe from predators there, only there. It is so crucial. And to invite both of you back in, you know, Sarah, we are more removed. You are right there. We want to support you, because the assault is so relentless. Do you sometimes feel that it's almost like that, because there's not that much oil there, and it wouldn't make any difference to prices, and maybe 3 cents in 10 years, you know, is it, how do you feel about it? Is it just this relentless kind of assault on life as a kind of symbol, going, we want to destroy it? I mean, I know that's hard to respond to, but you know, how what sustains you under this 20 years of relentless assault? Where do you gather your strength?
The elders' direction, the people that supported us, the environmentalists, they have a right to speak on public interest land. This is public interest land. This is your land as an American. You have a right to speak on it. And they did very well. And we work side by side. We talk about human rights, and they help us when the human rights issue come up, that we speak for ourselves, and we work side by side like that. And thank you to the environmentalist community and the Democratic votes, and then also Republican votes. And I want to thank them for supporting us for last 20 years, and all the Americans that did get out of their way to help out. We need you. We still need you. And we want you to act now and call the Congress, call your congressional people. There is a power in that. You have that power, and that's a good power. So use it. And make it good. And we need prayer, because we found which in steering committee, which we stand against the oil development with by the elders, directed by the elders, and by prayer and a spiritual foundation. And that's how we're doing it, and still doing in that way. And we do need your help.
Absolutely. And also, Carol Hoover, isn't Stevens in Alaska, isn't he under indictment?
Yes.
I mean, he is.
He certainly is. He certainly is.
So we want to kind of amp that up in the spirits. You know, I think that the model is, you know, again, we're allowed to set in motion with our prayers and fierce blessing anything of which we would be the happy recipient. So accountability, we're going to do shows soon on, you know, bringing George Bush to trial for war crimes. Yes. Important yes. Books, really important accountability in Ted Stevens' indictment for, I can't remember, what is he under indictment for? Remind us, Carol.
Well, one of them, I think, is he was taking money and having houses built and all kinds of things, and then extending favors to specific businesses.
That's right. Yes.
In exchange for free work and other things. And I think it's pretty rampant.
So is Don Young.
Say what?
So is Don Young. So is Don Young.
And so is Don Young, our congressman as well.
Oh, okay. And then wait, say that again, Sarah James. What about Don Young?
So is Don Young. He's getting indicted too, but he's our representative from Alaska, only one. And he's using his campaign money to pay for his lawyer, and they think that's just, but that's what they're checking him out for.
Oh, that's well, good. And we support the redirection of attention from drilling to indictment. Drilling to indictment of the, you know, those, absolutely. Let's go to our first caller, who is Tanya in Cotati. Come in, Tanya.
Hello. Hi. Drilling to indictment. Are you there?
Yes.
I like that. I just wanted to let you know that we are doing our part up here. Just last night, I spoke in front of the Cotati City Council, urging them to vote to send a letter to Congress to impeach Bush. And so we, I think, are the 93rd city in the country to do this, and I am just so excited. I finally feel so good, and I realize that I, too, have felt an assault, and I think the entire country has felt psychically to some measure, an assault on ourselves. And I felt a weight lifted off my shoulders. And I also felt like that 100th monkey syndrome, like, hey, maybe the tides are turning. And, hey, maybe he will be indicted. Maybe he will be impeached. This is a possibility. And I am just so thrilled. And thank you so much for protecting that refuge up there. And I feel connected to you. And I know we are. So I just wanted to say all that. Thank you.
Thank you. That's good.
Thank you, Tanya.
Yeah. Yes, the relentless assault, but the tide is turning. Okay, drilling to indictment is our mantra. Let's go to Adele in Hawaii. Come in, Adele in Hawaii.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I'm a little older person, so I've been, you know, present and seeing what's been going on politically over the years and decades, and even years ago, I worked for a PERG and did fundraising on the phone and talked my head off till I was blue in the face about, you know, not drilling in the, you know, Arctic Refuge, and I see that, you know, our energies are still very kind of splintered on this in our society, and my greatest feeling at this point in time, looking at all the problems, all the complexity, and how overwhelming it is for the average person, I really would like to see, amongst all the movements going on for political and economic and social justice, and a tremendous focus on getting the information out to every citizen that we have alternative power generation options. They're hidden. The major corporations have all bought up patents, killed off inventors, done everything for over 100 years now, and it's only being applied in military, you know, arenas. A lot of technologies that would move us all beyond,
What would your blessing be?
My blessing would be that people could unify around the knowledge that there are new technologies and use all the push and all the shove to make that happen, because that would displace everybody we don't particularly like right now.
Okay, may it be so. Thank you, Adele. That's good, right? So may it be that people wake up, that we again call to the positive, ornery, disobedient, you know, kindred, inventive spirit going, go, oh, wake up, humans. There is. And I do find it intriguing, and let me invite, you know, Carol and Sarah, that it is Texas also that is changing into wind power, going, all right, it's like the solution lies in the problem if we flip it, going, all right, Texas, not the thing. Wind power. And then there's, of course, so much, we're going to have Bob Goff on, soon on the radio to report on the, you know, red green power, the northern, American tribes and the Canadian tribes doing great stuff with wind power on the reservations. So again, what we often say is, once again, it's First Nation people who are going to, you know, save the world's butt. We go, yes, absolutely. Let's go to our next caller, Patricia in San Bruno. Come in, Patricia.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for your program. First, I wanted to say what a wonderful voice, Sarah James. Is that her name, Sarah James?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, great. I'm going to get more. What I really appreciate about today's program is that we're getting information on what we can do. I appreciate being given to contact the Alaska Wilderness League and learn more. And what I want to say is that we only have so much energy, and we really need to focus at this time our energy on keeping that area pristine and, you know, for the animals and for future generations. And I don't know if you're aware, but there are calls that some organization is making to individual homes, because I was called and I was engaged in like a 20-minute conversation about drilling and would it make a difference if oil prices were cheaper and things like that. So there's a lot of misinformation going out there, and I've listened to a lot of the right-wing radio talk programs where the hosts are really, you know, beating the drum about we need to do this.
Yes.
A lot of the younger generations are saying, yes, let's do it, because, you know, they're thinking that it's going to help them by cheaper gas. And I know that that's not true, and it's going to take 5 to 7 years for any oil to come out of anywhere. And So my response has been, I've been to Corpus Christi, and you keep mentioning Texas. You walk the beaches of Corpus Christi, and the oil is in the air. It's on the beaches. It's in the water. It's horrible what they've done to that area. And so I guess what I want to get to is there anything else besides the Alaska Wilderness League that we can gain information? We can use the kind of information that Sarah James is giving us, you know, facts, because I didn't know the things that she said before I heard her today, and I can't remember them, but I want to be able to send emails to all of my friends and colleagues and business partners about this, with this information, so people can move forward knowing what they're talking about.
That's great. Sarah, we can always say them again, what you've said that Patricia wants to know, so that we, one, to address the fallacy when people out of fear go, we must drill everything. Didn't BP even do a study about potential oil in the Arctic Refuge and said it's not worth drilling? Didn't that happen several years ago?
Yes. And all the scientists throughout the United States, over 1,000 sign on, Academy of Science sign on, the churches sign on, all the tribe, over 500 tribes sign on, and Women's Cup, National Women's Cup, National Reform too, because of the genocide history. So we have a huge support out there, and the way you can find out is website www.GuchenSteeringCommittee.org. Guchen spelled GWICHIN. The way to say it is Guchen, and then you put G in the front, say Guchen. So that's Guchen Steering Committee, and you can find all kinds of information about who's supporting and how we've been doing for the last 20 years or so, and there's a long history on this standing with the Guchen Nation.
That's great. You know, and again, as aspiring, you know, compassionate tricksters and visionary activists, did you know is a great way to enter into conversations. You know, all the things that Sarah and Carol are providing us with, you know, did you know that there are people living up there? Did you know that? Did you know that birds from all 50 states and 6 continents go to the very exact area where the oil companies want to drill? Did you know that BP did this study and there is not enough oil worth drilling? It's just the desire to kind of destroy things. Did you know that it's the last, you know, intact Arctic and Arctic ecosystem left in North America? You know, these are really crucial things. I feel, Sarah and Carol, that, you know, it's like when visiting New Orleans, people there have been so alone, working so hard that it, you know, we need to step in. And in the same way, Sarah James, you know, you've been working so hard for 20 years that it's really time, you know, for us to step in so you feel replenished and supported, so you can put your hand on the tiller but feel that, you know, we're the wind behind you going, here we go. That is really crucial. May it be so. Well, let's go to our next ally, Patricia in Fairfax. Come in, Patricia.
All of you, this is about making democracy local, which Fairfax did recently. Lynn Woolsey, who's our representative from Marin and Sonoma, wrote a letter to the mayors of every town asking them to pass a resolution out of Iraq, end the war, end the occupation. Fairfax, of course, was easy. We did it here right away. I'll give you the other end of the spectrum is the town of Mill Valley, who recently refused to take any action in response to Lynn Woolsey's request because they have a policy which they made more than 20 years ago that they do not take action on state, national, or international matters, only on potholes and such crap. So, Eddie, I'm sorry, but we became deeply ashamed of Mill Valley when we went there to try to make this happen. Any of you have a city council. It's your city council. Go to them with the issues that you're talking about today and ask them to pass a resolution, which they will pass on up to the higher levels of government. Do it all the time. Do it every time they meet. If they won't put your will, we are the people. If they don't put our will and make it manifest, then get them out of office. We've got to put democracy back into the hands of people. You, me, everybody. That's where it started in America. And we have to put it back there, as well as doing all the things that you're talking about today. Politics has got to be local. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Okay, and I think the appropriate high dudgeon, as our ally Patricia is expressing, is clearly a renewable and sustainable fuel. I'm going, and Sarah, what about the fierce protectiveness of women, kind of the fierce desire to protect nature that clearly coming through Patricia and clearly coming through you? You know, I mean, do you feel kind of nature comes up, that there's a part of you that's like Mother Grizzly Bear going, no, you cannot have this life?
Yes, in many ways it does. And you know, that place we're talking about is a nursing ground for the porcupine caribou birthplace. That's where they have their calf. That's where they do their nursing with their calf and make that connection. Just enough time for the mother and calf to be together and train her calf to protect himself from danger, and then they go on to their migratory routine that they do every year. So it's a time for mother and the calf, just like the woman and their child. And we all came from our mother. And if it wasn't for my father, I won't be here either. So we need that respect back to our way of thinking and doing things, and have more respect for each other, have more respect for the life out there. That's human rights, and we need to do that. And the war is not war is not the answer.
Absolutely. So, yes, we are dedicated to moving true reverence for life back into positions of leadership in every way, because it is all one unified pulsing story. I mean, we are all in this. This is the Sarah James part of all of us speaking, and the Carol Hoover part of all of us speaking. So let's go to our next part of our team, Julie in Santa Rosa.
Yeah, hi, Carolyn, and special thanks to your guests. I just wanted to let you know, in my neighborhood in central Santa Rosa, we've been working really hard to do a little village building so that we get to know our neighbors and we help each other, so we're not so dependent on fossil fuels. So when we want entertainment, we don't have to drive somewhere. If we need health care, we can help each other. We can share food. We can grow food together. And I just wanted to, I've been working really hard on this for a number of years, and when I'm listening to your guests, our allies, speaking about all my relations, I just feel such a connection and such a power. And I feel every time we make a decision not to drive our car to go to the concert or to go out to dinner or whatever, and we make the decision to build our community right where it is in a way that's sustainable and doesn't hurt any life anywhere, it's such a powerful thing. And I just wanted to thank guests for their work and encourage all people around to consider who lives within a mile or within walking distance from your home. Consider how you can get your food from your neighborhood, how you can share it, how you can build community and break away from that dependence on fossil fuels that would allow us to consider drilling. And there's so much power in it, and I feel really moved for some reason. I'm just like kind of been shaking listening to this whole program, because it feels like it reinforces what I'm trying to do. And I also wanted to throw out there that in November we're going to have a chance to vote for a train in Northern California. It's just a small step, but to get out of our cars and to support public transportation will help a lot in reducing the pressure for drilling in these beautiful places and hurting indigenous people around the world. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And let me pass it back to you, Sarah, about it's a perfect doorway, right, that Julie opens for us to connect to the intimacy, the Gwich'in, you'll have to keep excusing my pronunciation, I'm sorry, but your intimacy when you say, you know, the intertwined connection to the porcupine caribou and your intimacy with the land, which is something you haven't lost, which we must regain. So what is the relationship, just to, again, so everyone can see it, between the Gwich'in people, your people, and the porcupine caribou herd?
Yeah, caribou is everything to us. It's a song, it's a story. We do caribou dance, and we it's our clothing. A lot of our clothes still made from caribou skin, and it used to be our shelter, caribou skin hut. We do caribou skin hut dance, and so everything to caribou is our tools. We still use that one piece of tools to clean that skin. It's a bone from the caribou, and it's sitting in Ottawa Museum. They think it's dated back to 30,000 years, so we're connected that way. It's our survival. And many times when we go hungry and starving, migratory help us come through, and we eat good again. And that's how we survive throughout for thousands of years, and we respect that. It makes us who we are, and that's human rights.
Wonderful. Strong. Let's go to our next ally caller, Frank in Pacifica. Come in, Frank. Frank, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me? Hello.
Yeah, okay. We hear you now.
Okay. Great. Yeah, thank you for the mother from the tribe. They're doing the work, getting the word out to people. This is what, you know, we have to do. I mean, basically we're preaching to the choir here, and I'm just like to hear, you know, people moving in instead of, you know, they're getting into the info game, you know, everybody, oh, like, this is what I hear, that's what I hear, and they just spin it and spin it and spin it, and some people just get confused, they shut down because there's so much information. But I think the actions, you know, and responsible, and we go with our heart, you know, and we be responsible for these things, you know, like not paying our taxes, you know, and standing together for that strength, because it's a fearful thing, you know, at times. But, you know, I think that a massive thing, like in Europe, you know, they stop work for 2 or 3 days. And I'd like to see that here. I hope that to be. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. It's a collaborative. Frank exhorts us for ingenious collaborative effort, and we put that on our work table and go, splendid, good. Let's really quickly, Elena in Mountain View. I think we have time for you, Elena. Eliana.
Wanted to call and to honor Sarah James' ancestors. What a gift you are, Sarah James, to our entire community, world community. And I too have been really impacted by hearing you speak today. And I just imagined to myself, wow, all of the different people in your ancestors and current community who have helped to grow in you these gifts that you share with all of us. And unlike the last caller, I actually find it very helpful when I hear about books or movies that other people have found to be very powerful. And recently I saw Escaping Suburbia. This film was so powerful because it gave concrete examples of things that we can do, whether we live in a city or in a rural area, to make a difference in terms of climate change. So thank you to all of you.
Thank you very much. And we're just wrapping up here. Carol, if you have a last blessing or conjuring that you want to put out for us.
Well, I actually do have a little bit. The newest issue of the New Yorker magazine has a wonderful article in it by ally Elizabeth Colbert called The Island in the Wind. And I think maybe it'd be great if we all read it, because this small community of people got together and actually completely turned their entire community into a non-fossil fuel run-by community. And it really is an inspirational article. We all can do it. And I just am so honored to be a good friend and allies of Sarah James. And all of you should come to Alaska to connect back to the wilderness and to the wild salmon of the Copper River Delta, to the caribou of the north. We invite you, all allies, to stand with us and help us do the right thing.
Thank you, Carol. And Sarah James, do you want to give us one last shalak nai?
Yes, shalak nai masit cho tune in and go to another radio and do that.
We will.
I want to thank again many people that put out, and we need you again.
We are there. We are there. Thank you so much, Sarah James, Gwich'in Elder. Thank you, Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. Thank you, Andrew Chadwick here in Mordor with Atlantis Rising Underneath. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we will reconvene next week. Thanks again so much, Sarah James, and thanks, Carol Hoover.
Oh!
Oh!